Welcome to Econoday's Economist Roundtable. With me today are Jeremy Hawkins, who covers the UK and Europe, and Mark Pender, who covers the US. I'm Ann Picker, Econoday's chief economist, and I cover Asia. There were two market-moving events last week of major importance. The Bank of England not only lowered its bank rate, but also extended its quantitative easing program. In the U.S., a strong employment report with both May and June employment revised upward immediately raised the probabilities of a Fed rate increase. But in other parts of the economic community, discussions of the broken link between job gains and economic growth began to surface in earnest. Strong labor growth, but weak GDP growth. That's what we're talking about. Let's take the events in chronological order. Jeremy?
Okay, thanks, Anne. Yes, it was an interesting one last week. As you mentioned, we saw the latest effort by European Central Bank trying to meet its inflation target. And this time, of course, is a bit different because here we have a central bank, the B of E, cutting interest rates and boosting quantitative easing, as you said, despite the fact that its own updated forecasts show inflation above its 2% target over the policy relevant projection period. So just in a nutshell, we had a 25 basis point cut in bank rate. So that's now at a new record low of just a quarter of the percent. Point, and indeed the promise of more to come if necessary. We saw a 60 billion sterling increase in the stock of quantitative easing provided by purchase of gilts, UK sovereign debt bonds, to 435 billion. We also saw a 10 billion of corporate bond purchases announced in the pipeline as well. And finally, a new so-called new term funding scheme, which will aim to protect banks' profit margins as we see rates come down again and really trying to encourage them to pass all that on. So it's an interesting one in the sense that we've got higher inflation and yet we still have lower interest rates. And I guess here the thing to take away from this is the fact that it's how you interpret the data. And the important aspect here is to look through the temporary effects. And superficially, of course, a jump in inflation from what, 0.5% at the moment to the bank's forecast of not far short of 2.5% in a couple of years' time ought to mean that policy is too loose. But this time, it's really a case that higher prices are due to the slump in sterling. It's down, what, the best part of 10% or so against most of the major currencies since the Brexit vote. And that's just going to provide a one-off so-called stock adjustment to the price level. So the Monetary Policy Committee over here is looking through that and concentrating much more upon an increasingly gloomy outlook as it sees it for UK growth. Now that, of course, comes at a time when, as you mentioned, the Fed is really talking about potentially perhaps increasing interest rates over there. So I'll just quickly pass across to Mark, I suppose, with the obvious question is, given the state of Europe and parts of Asia, should the Fed even be contemplating a hike at this stage in the first place?
Interesting question. The global effects, when you're inside the U.S. economy, it's a different look. This is a very large, domestic-focused economy based on jobs and based on consumer spending. And that all seems to be fitting nicely into place. This last week's jobs report was very, very decisive. It showed very, very solid gains, right in line with the best of the recovery's trend, 255 for July, and an upward revised 292 for June to offset, which was a weak May. But you put everything together, along with other indications on the economy, especially consumer spending. We had a big vehicle sales month in July, which we really haven't seen kick into gear yet this year. And auto sales were a big factor in the 2015 economy. So whether or not the global, the Fed really, you know, it really has to play that global card when it suits its needs, because it's not really part of their agenda. Specifically, their agenda, of course, is inflation and domestic employment. And global factors.
How much, sorry, quick interrupts.
Sure.
In terms of you mentioned, if the Fed's going to go down its own route,
uh-huh.
how concerned do you think they might be about a possible positive reaction from the dollar? I mean, clearly you've already seen the euro come off, partly on the back of Brexit, the Brexit vote, it's true. But do you think there's a risk if we do see the Fed going down the tightening route? We've had the Bank of England cut here. There certainly uh-huh. seems to be a pretty decent chance of ECB cutting as well. Uh-huh. You know, interest rate moving, differentials moving in favor of the dollar.
Uh-huh. Well, the dollar could very well gain, but, you know, I mean, there's balances. Now, I think, Jeremy, the perspective from Europe seems to be of, you know, wanting that competitive devaluation. You know, exports are very important to the U.S. for high-end industrial goods especially. But, again, we're a domestic-focused economy. And when the dollar slides, then an offset to that or weakness or it stops growing so fast is that you get lower demand for financial assets, securities here. And so it's a mix of things. And a strong currency isn't in an economy that's doing well. Isn't really a negative. Just remember back to the old Deutschmark. The Germans were able to produce goods that people wanted, and they were willing to pay a premium for it. And so they had the benefits of both worlds. So I think currency isn't the make or break. I mean, it could be on the margin, but right now the economy is doing pretty well.
It's my turn to interrupt.
Okay, go ahead, please.
The Fed, yeah. How can they equate the lousy GDP growth
uh-huh.
and other signs of weak growth uh-huh. with the strong gains in employment?
Well, it's low.
Isn't there a disconnect there?
It's low productivity. It's not really a disconnect. Unfortunately, it's quite apparent. We just had the productivity numbers for the second quarter preliminary ones come out. We're down 3 quarters in a row. Now, I went back through my Haver, and I looked at that, and that's the first time. This series starts in 1945. That's the first time, unless I need new glasses, this is the third time in a row, which is pretty scary. And that's a function. You know, people are putting in more hours. There's more people putting in more hours, and compensation is going up a bit, but actual output isn't. So it's as fast as hours worked and as fast as compensation. And that has to do with business investment. And this is also tied to weak exports, too. The nation, U.S. produces a lot of machinery, a lot of electrical goods, systems, aircraft, all these kinds of things. And their demand is down. Aircraft demand is down. And when that happens, the ability to produce goods and services at an accelerating rate slows. And that's what we're seeing here. And it's a lack of confidence, business confidence. They're not spending money on new equipment. And until they do, you're going to have this low growth, high employment situation. And hopefully businesses will kick in gear. Maybe this is a fiscal matter, or this is a government matter. Maybe they should give tax breaks or these kinds of issues. Maybe it becomes so important, like building roads, or freeways or these kinds of things. These have to have a long, long, long term outlook, far beyond a single generation. And I think that maybe we should turn to perhaps government stimulus for encouraging businesses, which otherwise would not, to take the chance and buy new stuff.
It's interesting. I think we've got the same sort of issue, perhaps even more marked in terms of continental Europe. If we go back to the Great Recession, we saw business investment, capital investment in general within Europe being hit really, really hard, to the extent that we're still not, for a lot of countries, back up in terms of investment at the levels we had before the Great Recession took place. So we've had this kind of downgrading of the capital stock. And clearly, at the end of the day, productive potential is as much a function of the capital stock as of anything else. And so until we get that back up again, chances are the productivity rates, which you say they're poor in the States, well, they're pretty lousy across Europe and in the UK as well. We're going to be in that kind of scenario for quite some while.
And let's turn to Asia, Anne. How is productivity in Asia?
They don't really look at it particularly. I've not stumbled across a productivity measure for Japan, for example. but we all know that it's low. It's intuitive rather than specific. I question the U.S. productivity measures. I wonder if they're really catching the full economy and not just the deteriorating manufacturing sector. This is China's big week, actually, for data. The data include manufacturing trade, price data, IP, industrial production, and retail sales. So far, their data are particularly weak. Both imports and exports declined on the year in July, indicating weak growth domestically as well as internationally. Prices, CPI, eased, which down to 1.8% from 1.9% last month. And that's possibly will give the People's Bank of China an opportunity to lower rates. But I haven't seen any signs from PBOC that they're looking to do that particularly. Interestingly, the producer price index declined only 1.7%. A few months ago, the PPI was down as much as 5.9% on the year. So that seems to be improving. As far as industrial production and retail sales, we wait till Thursday morning Eastern time to find out about how those data did. I think we should call it a day.